Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars Jedi Search by Kevin J. Anderson. The black hole cluster reached out for the Millennium Falcon with jaws of gravity drawing it close. Even in the mottled blur of hyperspace, Han Solo could see the huge distortion as a bruised whirlpool trying to suck them down to infinity.
Hey, Chewie, that's too close.
He stared at the Falcon's navicomputer, wishing they had chosen a course that would take them a safer distance from the Maw.
What do you think this is, an old smuggling mission? We've got nothing to hide this time.
Beside him, Chewbacca looked disappointed and waved his hairy hands in the stifling air of the cockpit.
Yeah, well, we're on an official mission this time. No more skulking about. Try to act dignified, okay?
Han felt a pang at returning to his old haunts, reminded of when he had been just on the other side of the law, running spice, chased by Imperial scout ships. When his life had been free and easy. On one of those frantic missions, he and Chewbacca had shaved the bottom plating off the Falcon, taking a shortcut and skimming closer to the Maw cluster of black holes than had ever before been recorded. Sensible pilots avoided the area, using longer paths that kept them clear of the black holes. But the Falcon's speed had carried them to safety on the other side, making the Kessel run in under 12 parsecs. That mission had ended in disaster, anyway. Han had dumped his load of spice just before being boarded by Imperials. This time, though, Han was returning to Kessel under different circumstances. His wife, Leia, had appointed him an official representative of the New Republic, an ambassador of sorts. Han Solo found himself in the unlikely and uncomfortable position of being respectable. There was no other word for it. But Han's new responsibilities weren't just quaint annoyances. He was married to Leia. Who could have imagined that? And he had three children. Han leaned back in his flight chair and locked his fingers behind his head. He allowed a wistful smile to cross his face. He had visited the kids as often as he could in their protective isolation on the secret planet, and the twins were due to come home to Coruscant in a week. Anakin, his third child, still a baby, filled him with wonder. But he would have to remain on the secret planet with Leia's old friend Winter as his nanny. Han caught Chewbacca looking at him out of the corner of his eye.
Embarrassed, he sat up straight and frowned down at the controls. Now, where are we? Shouldn't it be about time to end this jump?
Chewbacca growled in affirmative, then grasped the hyperspace controls. The mottled coloring of hyperspace fanned into star lines and resolved into stars. Kessel looked like a wraith coasting along its orbit, too small to hold on to its own atmosphere. Huge generating factories constantly processed raw rocks to release oxygen and carbon dioxide, making it possible for people to survive outside with simple breath masks instead of total environment suits. A good portion of the newly manufactured atmosphere escaped into space, wisping behind the small planet like the tail of a giant comet. Kessel was a major planet for spice production, and seat of heavy smuggling activities, as well as the site for one of the toughest prisons in the galaxy. The Empire had controlled spice production, except for what smugglers managed to steal from under Imperial noses. But with the fall of the Emperor, the smugglers and the prisoners in the Imperial Correction Facility took over the planet. Kessel had laid low during the depredations of Grand Admiral Thrawn and the recent resurrection of the Emperor, trying hard not to be noticed, answering no one's request for help. With the Civil War ended and the New Republic once again firmly seated on Coruscant, leaving scattered groups of Imperial warships to fight each other, it was time to reopen negotiations.
Better get them on our side, Han thought.
As representative of the new unified smugglers, Luke's old nemesis Mara Jade had tried to contact Kessel and been flatly rebuffed. The Millennium Falcon approached Kessel, firing aft thrusters to help them catch up with the planet's motion, preparing for insertion into orbit. On the helm scanner screens, Han checked their approach.
Vectoring in.
Han looked down to see blips already in orbit around the planet, emerging from the blanketing clouds of the atmosphere.
Yeah, I see them. Looks like about a half dozen ships. Too far away to determine the types.
Han brushed aside Chewie's uneasiness.
Well, then, we'll just tell them who we are.
Why do you think Leia made such a fuss about getting us proper diplomatic ID signals and everything? Han toggled the audio pickup switch on.
This is Han Solo of the New Republic ship Millennium Falcon. We're on a diplomatic mission.
But the two closest ships roared toward him at unbelievable speed, spreading out on either side. The sight of their squared-off solar panels and central pilot compartments turned Han's blood to ice water.
TIE fighters. Chewie, get over here. I'm taking the laser cannon.
Han hauled himself up the access tube into the gunwale. One of the attacking ships swooped overhead, and the Falcon's sensor panels howled with the sound of twin ion engines, from which the TIE fighter took its name. The enemy vessel fired, but the beams streaked harmlessly through space. Other ships were approaching, and somehow Han didn't think they were coming to help the Falcon. Up ahead, the two TIE fighters swooped up in a tight arc and roared back for a second attack. But by this time, Han had managed to strap himself into the gunner's chair and to power up the laser batteries. The instant he pressed the firing button, Chewbacca threw the Falcon into an evasive roll. Han's laser blasts went wide, spraying toward the distant stars. The TIE fighter shot also missed, streaking in the opposite direction and coming perilously close to striking the second TIE fighter. The second fighter managed to readjust his aim quickly enough that his two shots scored the Falcon's shields. According to Chewie's preliminary damage report, the aft shields were gone. Forward shields were still holding well. That meant they had to take the TIE fighters head-on. As the first fighter swung around for a third pass, Han swiveled his gun turret as far as it would go. As soon as the targeting cross touched the image of the fighter, Han squeezed his firing buttons at full power, strafing his deadly laser across the path of the incoming ship. The ship erupted into a flame flower of exploding fuel tanks and expanding atmosphere. Han and Chewbacca shouted their triumph in unison.
Let's go get the other one, Chewie.
Chewbacca increased speed, closing the gap between the Falcon and the remaining TIE fighter, which was heading back toward Kessel.
Just get me one good shot, Chewie, one good shot.
Another ship roared up from behind as they chased the TIE fighter. Han fired off a few bursts from his laser, but they all missed. Then he turned his attention to the ship tailing them. It was an X-Wing fighter, and it was slowly gaining on the Falcon. The X-Wing fired. The laser scored a direct hit, incinerating the protruding sensor dish mounted on the top of the ship.
Turn us around! Turn us around!
Han shouted. They had to get their unprotected aft section out of the X-Wing's line of fire. The X-Wing shot again. All the lights went out inside the ship. With the Falcon sensor dish slagged, Han couldn't send out a distress call. He couldn't even surrender. Han's mind raced. They could skim around Kessel in a tight orbit, then slingshot back out of the system. With the black hole cluster so close at hand, no one would risk jumping into hyperspace without intensive prior calculations, and neither he nor Chewie could spare time to do them. Suddenly, Han's mouth dropped open. As they swept around Kessel, Han detected wave after wave of fighter ships launching from the garrison moon. Seeing it would serve no purpose to keep firing against overwhelming odds, Han dropped back down the access shaft of the gun turret to the cockpit. He settled himself into the other pilot's chair, just in time to see the indicator lights for the forward shields wink out. They were now totally unprotected, as another hit rocked them.
There goes the main drive unit, Chewie. We're space meat in the next barrage. Take us down. Get us into the atmosphere. It's the only thing we can do.
As Chewbacca expressed his disbelief, Han grabbed the controls and sent them lurching down toward Kessel.
It's gonna be a bumpy ride. Hold on to your fur.
Amidst a hail of hostile fire, they plunged through the atmosphere. The surface of Kessel rushed up at them like a gigantic hammer. Han fought with the controls.
Now, at least we'll have a soft landing with the new repulsorless we installed.
He started priming the controls. Nothing.
What?
Han slammed his fingers on the switch again and again, but the repulsor lifts refused to operate.
I just had those fixed.
Chewbacca had no time to answer before the ship crashed into the rugged surface of Kessel. The towers of Imperial City rose to the sky high above the shadowed surface of the planet Coruscant. The cornerstones of the towers had been in place for more than 1,000 generations, dating back to the formative days of the Old Republic. Over the millennia, higher and higher structures had been built on top of the old ruined foundations. Luke Skywalker stepped onto a shuttle landing platform that jutted out from the monolithic face of the former Imperial Palace. Gusts of wind whipped around him, and he pulled back the hood of his Jedi robe. He looked into the sky, pondering the thin layer of atmosphere that protected Coruscant from space beyond. Wrecked ships still rode in haphazard orbits, debris from the recent vicious war to recapture the planet from Imperial control. Luke was biding his time. The New Republic Senate had been in session for only an hour, and they would still be working on mundane issues. Luke wanted to startle them after they had been talking for a while. The immense metropolis of Imperial City bustled around him, little changed now that it was the seat of the New Republic instead of the Empire. Prior to that, it had been capital of the Old Republic. The capital building, formerly Emperor Palpatine's palace, was made of polished gray-green rock and mirrored crystals which sparkled in the hazy sunlight of Coruscant. Much of Imperial City had been laid waste during the months of civil war following the downfall of Grand Admiral Thrawn. The various factions of the old empire had fought over the Emperor's home world, turning vast districts into graveyards of crashed ships and exploded buildings. But the tide of battle had turned, and the New Republic had driven back the vestiges of the Empire. Many Alliance soldiers now turned their efforts to repairing the damage, Luke's friend Wedge Antilles among them. The Emperor's own construction droids ranged through the battle-scarred wastelands, automatically scraping up raw materials from the wreckage for conversion into new buildings. In the distance, Luke could see one of the enormous droids, 40 stories tall, wrecking a half-collapsed building shell and plowing a path where its programming had deemed a new road should be routed. Its girder arms toppled the stone face of the building and fed the debris into the processing mouth, where the materials would be separated and new components extruded. During the previous year of violent strife, Luke had been whisked away to the resurrected Emperor's stronghold in the galactic core. And there, he had allowed himself to learn the dark side. He had become the Emperor's chief lieutenant, just like his father, Darth Vader. The struggle had been great within him, and only with the help and the friendship and the love of Leia and Han had he been able to break free. He had survived tests and rigors more potent than routine Jedi training prepared him for. Luke understood more about the Force now than he had ever dreamed possible. Sometimes it terrified him. He turned and walked back inside the palace, pulling his robe tightly around himself. Luke stood at the entrance to the Senate Assembly Chamber. The room swept down to a giant amphitheater in which sat the inner circle of appointed senators and outer rows of representatives from different planets, different alien races. Mon Mothma, the New Republic's chief of state, spoke now on the central dais. With her short reddish hair and gentle voice, Mon Mothma did not look like a tough-as-nails military commander. As a former member of the Imperial Senate, she seemed to be more in her element now, trying to forge the pieces of the New Republic into a strong, unified government. Beside Mon Mothma sat Luke's sister, Leia Organa Solo. Leia had been performing more and more important diplomatic activities with each passing month. Finishing her speech, Mon Mothma raised her hands. "I call for any new business. Does anyone wish to speak?" Luke's timing had been perfect. He stepped into the light at the entrance archway and drew back his hood. "I would like to address the assembly, Mon Mothma, if I may." As he descended the long ramp, Luke felt all eyes turned toward him. A hush fell over the assembly. Luke Skywalker, the lone remaining Jedi Master, almost never took part in governmental proceedings. Mon Mothma gave him a soft, mysterious smile and gestured for him to take a central position. "The words of a Jedi Knight are always welcome to the New Republic." Luke tried not to look pleased. She had provided the perfect opening for him. "In the Old Republic, Jedi Knights were the protectors and guardians of all. For 1,000 generations, the Jedi used the powers of the Force to guide, defend, and provide support for the rightful government of worlds, before the dark days of the Empire came and the Jedi Knights were killed. Now I am the only Jedi Master who remains. Without that order of protectors to provide a backbone of strength for the New Republic, can we survive? What will happen when we begin squabbling among ourselves over petty matters? The old Jedi helped to mediate many types of disputes. What if there are no Jedi Knights to protect us in the difficult times ahead? Luke fixed his gaze on all the senators present. He turned his attention to Leia last. Her eyes were wide, but supportive. He had not discussed his idea with her beforehand. My sister is undergoing Jedi training. She has a great deal of skill in the Force. Her three children are also likely candidates to be trained as young Jedi. In recent years, I have come to know a woman named Mara Jade, who is now unifying the smugglers, the former smugglers, into an organization that can support the needs of the New Republic. She also has a talent for the Force. I have encountered others in my travels. But are these the only ones? I have come here to ask... He gestured toward Mon Mothma and swept his hand across the people gathered there in the chamber. For two things. First, that the New Republic officially sanction my search for those with a hidden talent for the Force to try to bring them to our service. Mon Mothma sat up straighter in her central seat. I think we can agree to that without further discussion. She looked around to the other senators, seeing them nod agreement. Tell us your second request. Luke stood taller. If sufficient candidates are found who have potential for using the Force, I wish to be allowed, with the New Republic's blessing, to establish in some appropriate place an intensive training center. A Jedi Academy, if you will. Senator Garm Bel-Iblis, who had brought his dreadnought ships against the Imperial Admiral Thrawn, rose slowly to his feet.
A comment, if I may. I'm sorry, Luke, but I have to raise the question. We just recently fought against Jorah Sabaoth, and, of course, Darth Vader nearly caused the death of us all. If a teacher as great as Obi-Wan Kenobi could fail and let his student fall to evil, how can we take the risk of training an entire new order of Jedi Knights? How many will turn to the dark side?
Luke nodded somberly. The question had been working at the back of his own mind, and he had pondered it deeply.
I can only say that we have seen these terrible examples, and we must learn from them. I myself have touched the dark side, and come through stronger and more wary of its powers than ever before.
Admiral Akbar got to his feet and applauded with his flipper-like hands.
I agree that the Jedi's request is in the best interests of the New Republic.
Soon all the senators were standing. Luke saw a broad grin on Leia's face as she too stood. Mon Mothma nodded gravely. She was the last to stand up, and she raised her hand for silence. I give you my hopes for the rebirth of the Jedi Knights. We will offer whatever help we can. May the Force be with you. The sculpture on Leia's crystal table jittered forward, stopped, then rose into the air. The figure was a fat man with spread palms and a grin wide enough to swallow an X-Wing fighter. The dealer had assured Leia that it was a genuine Corellian sculpture, that it would make Han recall fond memories of his own world. Upon receiving the anniversary gift, Han thanked her profusely, but could barely control his laughter. He finally explained that the statue was a trademarked figurine stolen from a chain of cheap Corellian eating establishments.
Keep concentrating, Leia,
Luke whispered, leaning closer. He watched her intently. Her eyes were focused on the far distance, not seeing the sculpture at all. The statue continued to levitate, rising higher off the table. Suddenly it bumped forward to topple onto the floor. Leia heaved a sigh and slumped back in the self-conforming chair. Luke tried to cover his disappointment. His sister's training had been much less rigorous than his own with Yoda, and more haphazard as she continually rescheduled lessons to accommodate her increasing diplomatic duties. But Leia concerned him. He had been working with her for more than 7 years now, and she seemed to be blocked, having reached the limit of the powers she could master. He reached out with his fingers to touch her dark hair. I'm going to try to probe your mind. Try to resist me, or at least pinpoint where I am. Luke half closed his eyes, then sent faint tendrils of thoughts into her mind, deftly touching the topography of her memory. At first she didn't react, but then he could feel her concentrating, building an invisible wall around his probe. Luke reached to the back of her mind, an area of deep primal memories but little conscious thought. He touched inward to an isolated nub in her mind. He pushed, and suddenly felt as if a giant invisible palm had planted itself on his chest and shoved backward. He stumbled to keep his balance, taking two steps away from her. Leia's mouth dropped open in surprise.
"What did you do?"
Luke asked. "I didn't do anything," she replied. Luke allowed himself to smile. "Your reflexes did, Leia. When a medical droid taps your knees, your leg jerks whether you want it to or not. We may have just stumbled onto something a potential Jedi has that others don't."
At least the ship didn't explode on impact. That was the first thing Han Solo thought as painful consciousness returned. Somehow they had survived a crash landing. His eyes widened as he saw red splashes across the control panels. His own blood. His leg felt as if it were on fire, and he tasted liquid tin in his mouth. Turning his head, he saw the Wookiee in the co-pilot's chair, his pelt matted with blood. Someone from outside managed to hotwire the ramp, and he heard heavy footsteps marching across it. Han wanted to pull out his blaster, but he could barely raise his eyes. The intruders wore a hodgepodge of armor, some parts modified from prison guard uniforms, other plates adapted from stormtrooper equipment. None of it made any sense to Han, but his mind had already maxed out with things that should never have happened. A TIE fighter and an X-Wing fighting side by side? Against him? A man who looked like a scarecrow with impossibly long arms and neck strode into the Falcon's cockpit. Han felt recognition stir inside him, but he couldn't pinpoint a name. The scarecrow turned wide-set, flinty eyes on him.
"Han Solo."
Though the breath mask covered his lower face, Han could tell the man was grinning widely.
"You're going to wish you never survived landing on Kessel."
With a flash of memory, the scarecrow's name came to Han. Skinksnacks. That was it. But Skinksnacks had been locked up in the Imperial Correction Facility. Questions had just begun forming in Han's mouth when Skinksnacks brought an armored fist down on his head, sending him back into unconsciousness.
Kessel. Spice. Han's thoughts mixed into nightmares as he fought to come back to himself. He'd always been proud to boast that the Falcon had made the Kessel run in record time, but he rarely recounted the whole tale. He got the shipment, as always, from Morath Duel, the frog-like man who had been in charge of skimming black market spice from Imperial production quotas. Duel was some sort of official in the gigantic Imperial prison complex from which came most of the spice mine laborers. The Empire maintained strict control over the spice output, but Duel managed to keep quite a little side market of his own. Han Solo and Chewbacca had run spice for him, whisking it past Imperial patrols and putting it into distribution channels run by gangsters such as Jabba the Hutt. But Duel had a habit of stringing along his helpers until he decided he could gain bigger favor by turning them over to the authorities. Han had never been able to prove it, but he suspected that Duel himself had tipped off the tariff ships about the Falcon's flight away from Kessel. Han had been forced to jettison his entire cargo of Glitterstim spice worth a fortune just before being boarded. The lost cargo of spice alone had been worth 12,400 credits. And Jabba the Hutt had already paid for it in full. Jabba had not been pleased. Opening his eyes, Han stared up into the bullet-like face of a medical droid. Around him, the prison medical center was white and cold. When he tried to turn his head, the medical droid clamped its cold metal hands against his temples.
"You must remain motionless. This will hurt a great deal. Now relax. Immediately."
Chewie shook him awake with a hairy, enthusiastic, and grateful hug. Han groaned and blinked his eyes. His entire body felt as if it had been beaten instead of healed. Chewbacca looked scruffy and haggard. After treatment, the two of them had been tossed into this dank place. The gigantic cell had green and blue smears of slime oozing down its walls. The only noise was the sound of dripping.
"How long have we been here, Chewie? Do you know?"
Chewbacca didn't. The door clicked and rose, flooding the room with garish white light.
"Get ready, Chewie."
The skeletal figure silhouetted in the door was obviously Skinksnacks.
"We want to learn exactly why you came to spy on Kessel," he said.
A lift took them past the main cell block areas and then along a tube to the outer corners of the correctional facility. Looking through the scratched, transparent walls of the elevator, Han could see that the prison itself was a massive tan and gray edifice made of plasteel and synthetic rock. A glassed and mirrored substructure protruded from the face, housing the administrative offices and prison personnel. In the racing elevator, Skinksnecks kept his modified double blaster trained on them. Both Han and Chewbacca had been strapped into stun cuffs, a restraining fixture across the wrists that sent paralyzing jolts of electricity directly into the nervous system, proportional in strength to the amount of struggle a prisoner exerted. Skinksnecks escorted them through administrative offices, many of which had been ransacked or burned. Han complied and walked easily ahead. He'd had his troubles with Morath Duel, and he did not trust the man a bit. But as far as he knew, there was no powerful grudge between them. They went past a broad anteroom to a huge office faced by giant windows that looked out upon the barrens of Kessel. Powerful radiation shields in orbit filtered out a large percentage of the deadly X-rays and gamma rays pouring from the nearby maw. If not for the precious spice, no one would bother trying to live on Kessel. The original sign on the desk unit announced this to be the Warden's headquarters, but someone had crossed out the previous ID tag and mounted a hand-lettered sign in Basic, Duel's Place. On the wall to the right of the desk unit hung a man captured in final throes of agony, frozen in carbonite. Duel had taken a lesson from Jabba, displaying some old nemesis for all to see, and shivered just looking at the trophy. Next to the window, a barrel-shaped form stood silhouetted by the garish light. Morath Duel. Duel was a Rybet, squat and soft-skinned. His bright green coloring and tan highlights looked like worm stripes up and down his cheeks, arms, and shoulders. His skin was dry, but so smooth it looked shiny. Duel sported a bright yellow cravat, which meant he was in mating readiness, though Han couldn't imagine where on the planet Duel would ever find a willing female of his own species. Duel turned around, displaying a much-changed face. His Rybet eyes were overlarge, lantern-like, with vertical slits, but one of his eyes was now milky white, like a half-cooked egg. He wore a mechanical focusing device over his other eye, strapped onto his smooth head with brown leather straps. Duel fiddled with his mechanical eye, and the lenses clicked and whirred into place like a camera unit. After a long inspection, he finally hissed in recognition.
"It is you, Han Solo."
Han frowned. "I've been hitting the spice too heavily, I see, Morath. Always gets the eyesight first." Duel tapped the contraption in his eye.
"It wasn't spice that did this. When you dumped your load of glitter stem, Jabba blamed it on me. He tried to have me killed. I had to beg them to take only my eye. I had to beg them to take my eye. All because of your cowardice."
Chewbacca expressed his outrage, and Han barely kept his own anger in check. "Jabba put out a contract on me too, Duel. Boba Fett captured me on Bespin, and I was trapped in carbonite just like your friend there." He gestured to the gruesome trophy on the wall. "And I got set to Jabba anyway." Duel waved a hand in dismissal.
"Jabba's men had already infiltrated the spice mining operations, and he wanted to expose me so his own people could procure the glitter stim directly. His hitman would have done more than nearly blind me, but Skinksnecks killed him."
At the doorway, the Scarecrow smiled with pride.
"Jabba forced my hand, and I had to act. We staged the prison revolt. The Warden himself was Jabba's man. That's him up on the wall there. But half the guards were on my side. I paid them well, you see. Luckily, the Empire was thrown into chaos right about the same time. We took Kessel for ourselves. I've been stockpiling spice supplies and building up a massive defense fleet with everything I can scrape together. Nobody, and I mean nobody, is going to come here and take things away from me. Everything was going just fine before you had to get Jabba angry at me. Everything was safe. I knew just how to play the game. Now I'm jumping at shadows, afraid every moment."
Duel stared at Han.
"Did you think you could just fly into our space, look around, and go back to your republic with all the information they need to come take us over?"
He slapped his palm on the desktop with a damp splat.
We'll strike the first blow by killing you, their spy. And we will be ready to blast them out of the sky the moment their attack ships come out of hyperspace.
Pondering how Leia might have handled a situation like this, Han tried as tactfully as possible to convince Duel that he and Chewie had come to Kessel on a mission of peace. Duel did not believe a word of it.
I'll get the information out of you quickly now, but I may have time to enjoy interrogating you later, just on general principle.
Duel placed his webbed palm on top of a sealed container. The box was filled with slender, black-wrapped cylinders about half as long as a finger. Glitterstim, Han said.
Duel looked at him.
The most potent form of spice. With it, I'll be able to read the truth of what you say.
Duel selected one of the slim black cylinders. With a deft motion, he peeled off the opaque outer wrapper and withdrew a thin bundle of transparent glossy fibers. As he held the inert glitter stem up to the light, pouring through the broad viewing window, the light-sensitive spice began to scintillate and glow from within, ripening. Duel opened his mouth when the segment of glitter stem glowed a pearlescent blue. He extended his sharp, purplish tongue to wrap around the crystalline fibers, which he drew back into his mouth. The spice would work on Duel's mind, pump up his latent powers. Han winced as he felt tiny fingers clawing around in his brain, picking through the lobes of memory, images he had stored in his thoughts, searching, searching. Han felt anger growing, outraged that Morath Duel could dissect the private moments he had with Leia. But the spice effects lasted only a few moments, and Duel would be concerned mainly with learning why Han and Chewbacca had come to Kessel.
I really was telling you the truth, Duel. We came in peace, but you just declared war on yourself by shooting down the New Republic's first ambassadors.
The Rybet's mouth hung slack, glitter-stim sparks sputtering around his cheeks.
No!
Duel whirled to glare at Skinksnecks.
What are we going to do? He's telling the truth.
He can't be. He's...
This spice doesn't lie. He's here for exactly the reasons he said. The New Republic is going to come after us, and they'll wipe us out.
Kill the two of them now. If we work fast, we can cover everything up.
Han felt fear return.
Now, wait a minute. I'm sure we can fix this up with a few careful messages. I am the ambassador, after all. Diplomatic credentials and everything. I wouldn't want a simple misunderstanding.
No, we can't risk that. Duel, you know what Solo has done before. He knows you tipped off the Imperial tariff ships to go after him.
Actually, Han hadn't been certain until that very moment.
Now, there's no need to panic. I can talk to the New Republic Senate.
Duel tapped a finger against his swollen lips.
I agree with Skinksnacks. I'll review the battle tapes, but I don't believe you transmitted any messages after coming out of hyperspace. One of our fighters shot off your communications dish. The New Republic has no way of knowing you arrived safely. With no evidence, they will conclude you got swallowed up by the Maw.
Duel began to pace in front of the large viewing window.
We'll delete any mention of you from our records. Instruct all my mercenaries to forget about the attack. Yes, that'll be the safest alternative.
You're making a big mistake. Han could barely restrain his urge to yank at the stun cuffs.
No.
Duel tapped his squishy-tipped fingers together.
I don't think so. My best bet would be to kill you right away.
Duel answered Chewbacca. Then he rubbed his fingers against his blind eye. He turned to Han.
But you still owe me for this, Solo. Even if you worked every day for 100 years, it would never repay me for the loss of my eye. You both are going down into the spice mines, the deepest and most distant tunnels.
Duel grinned with his wide frog-like mouth. A final flicker of blue sparks rippled at the corner of his lips.
No one will ever find you down there.
Luke Skywalker emerged from hyperspace into a magenta, orange, and icicle-blue galactic ocean of ionized gas known as the Cauldron Nebula. He looked at the spectacle and smiled. He punched in the coordinates for Eol Shah. His modified passenger shuttle arced through the wispy gas, leaving the nebula above him as the engines kicked in. He'd wanted to take his trusty old X-Wing, but that ship was a single-person craft with room for only an astromech droid in the back. If Luke's hunches about Jedi descendants proved correct, he would be bringing two candidates back to Coruscant with him. According to outdated records in the memory banks back on Coruscant, the settlement on Eol Shah was established a century before by entrepreneurs who intended to use ramjet mining ships to plow through the Cauldron Nebula and scoop up valuable gases. The mineship pilots would distill the gaseous harvest into pure rare elements for sale to other outposts. The nebula mining scheme had never paid off. The entrepreneurs had not counted on the true costs of ramjet ships and the unremarkable composition of the cauldron's gases. The outpost on Eol Shah had been left to fend for itself. The outpost had been rediscovered 2 years ago by a New Republic sociologist who had visited them briefly, recorded his insights, and filed a report recommending immediate evacuation of the doomed colony, all of which was promptly forgotten in the already blossoming bureaucracy of the New Republic and the fight against Grand Admiral Thrawn. The item that had attracted Luke's attention, though, was that a woman named Ta'anya, an illegitimate descendant of a Jedi, had been one of the original colonists on Eol Shah. Luke would have suspected the Jedi's bloodline had ended there, except for one small detail. According to the sociologist's report, the leader of the ragtag colonists, a man named Gantoris, was said to be able to sense impending earthquakes, and he had miraculously survived as a child when his playmates were killed in an avalanche. Luke felt these stories were exaggerated, but still, the clues and the circumstantial evidence led him to Eol Shah. He had to follow every lead if he was to find enough candidates for his Jedi training center. The shuttle settled onto the planet's rocky terrain, and Luke exited through flip-up doors behind the passenger seats. The air of Eol Shah smoldered in his nostrils, filled with acrid sulfurous smoke and chemical vapors. The gigantic moon loomed on the horizon like a platter of beaten brass, casting its own shadows even in daylight. Murky clouds and volcanic ash hovered in the air like a hazy blanket. In the near distance, hardened mounds of lava sprawled around a volcanic cone. Halfway to the decrepit habitation module that was all that was left of the human outpost, Luke fell to his knees when a jolt went through the ground. The rocks bounced and the earth rumbled. Suddenly, the random craters around him cracked, then belched towers of steam and scalding droplets of water. Geysers, all of them. He had walked into a field of geysers, triggered by the earthquake to erupt simultaneously. Steam rolled over the ground like a dense fog. When Luke finally emerged from the steam, he saw two men staring at him from the doorway of a rusted and ancient prefab shelter. "I have come to speak with Gantoris." One of the men, who identified himself as Wharton, fumbled for words, then they came out in a rush.
"Everyone is gone. There's been a rock slide in one of the crevasses. It's buried two of our youngest who went out to spear Bogdillos. Gantoris and the others are there, trying to dig them out."
Luke felt a stab of urgency and grasped Wharton's arm. "Take me there. Maybe I can help." Wharton knew exactly where to find the other survivors, in the maze of channels and partial landslides. Luke saw them, shoulder to shoulder, in an elbow of the crevasse, scrambling over newly fallen rock, working to haul boulders aside. One man worked with twice the effort of the others. His long black hair hung in a braid on the left side of his face. His eyebrows and eyelashes had been plucked away, leaving his broad face smooth and angular and flushed with his exertion. He shoved rocks aside, which the other people hauled away. By the way Wharton and the others looked to him, Luke guessed the man must be Gantoris. With a quick glance, Luke took in the positioning of the boulders. He rolled his eyes back in concentration and reached out through the force, using the strength he found there to feel the boulders, to move them, and to keep other rocks from doing further damage. When Yoda had trained him to lift large stones, it had been merely a game, a training exercise. Now two lives depended on it. He paid no attention to the astonished sounds as the colonists stepped back, ducking out of the way as Luke mentally hurled boulder after boulder from the top of the rock pile, tossing them into other parts of the crevasse. He could feel life down in the shadowy depths somewhere. "She's alive!" someone shouted, and several helpers rushed into the debris, hauling free a young girl.
The young boy had not been so lucky. The avalanche had crushed him instantly. The boy had been dead long before Luke arrived. Luke kept the unstable pile of rocks steady until they had excavated the body. Amid sobs of grief, he released himself from his semi-trance and opened his eyes. Gantoris stood directly in front of him.
"Why are you here? Who are you?"
he asked. Wharton blinked in awe as he looked at Luke.
"He says he's come for you, Gantoris."
"Yes, I know."
The look on Gantoris's face seemed a frightening mixture of horror and eagerness.
"I have dreamt of you. A dark man who offers me incredible secrets, then destroys me. I am lost if I go with you."
Luke glanced at the people around him and decided to gamble. He stared directly into Gantoris's eyes. "What can I do to prove my intentions to you?" Instead of replying, Gantoris said,
"Take the dark man."
Several people reached forward to grasp Luke's arms. He did not struggle. Gantoris glared at Luke.
"We will learn why you are here."
Leia was eating breakfast on the park balcony high in Imperial Towers, thinking about the soon-to-be-returning twins and her still-missing husband. Why hadn't Han gotten in touch? She wasn't quite ready yet to admit she was worried about him. An older model protocol droid stood in the balcony's archway.
"Excuse me, Minister Organa Solo. Someone wishes to see you. Are you accepting visitors?"
Leia set down her breakfast pastry.
"Why not?"
"Probably some lobbyist wanting to complain to her in private, or a panicked minor functionary, or one of the other senators trying to hand off some of his own duties."
Instead, with a flourish of his vermilion cape, Lando Calrissian walked through the arch. Seeing him, Leia felt her mood immediately lighten. He gallantly kissed her hand, but she was not satisfied until she had given him a friendly hug.
"So what brings you to Coruscant?" Leia realized how eager she was just to have a normal conversation without diplomatic entanglements and hidden agendas.
"I just came to see how you all are doing in the big city. Where's Han?"
"He and Chewie went off to Kessel."
Kessel can be a pretty rough place."
Leia avoided his eyes. "Han hasn't bothered to call in 6 days."
"That's not like him," Lando said.
"Oh, yes it is, and you know it.
I suppose we'll have words when he comes back day after tomorrow."
Then she forced an artificial air of brightness.
"But let's not talk about that right now. How can you find time to trot around visiting people?" "To tell you the truth, I'm between engagements right now."
Lando gave her a lopsided grin, but she frowned back at him.
"What happened to your big mining operation on Naklon? Didn't the New Republic replace most of your destroyed machinery?" "Well, it was still a lot of work and not paying off."
Leia crossed her arms and looked at him skeptically. He squirmed.
"Well, I lost it in a sobic game."
She couldn't keep herself from laughing. "So you're out of work?"
Just then, the old protocol droid shuffled to the arch again, but before he could announce his business, C-3PO and R2-D2 bustled around him, making a direct path to Leia.
"Princess Leia! Oh, General Calrissian, what are you doing here?"
3PO could not contain his excitement.
"We've found one!"
3PO dutifully translated.
"We've been looking for possible Jedi candidates for Master Luke. R2 was checking the records of various winners in different gambling establishments throughout the galaxy. We seem to have encountered a man who has extraordinary luck at the Umgulian blob races."
3PO handed a hard copy printout of the winning statistics to Leia, but she passed it on to Lando.
"You're better trained to understand this than I am."
"You will note that while Mr. Timo loses quite often in the minor races, in every instance where he has bet more than 100 credits on a particular blob, that blob won the race."
Leia's eyes sparkled.
"Someone needs to check this out. If it's just a scam, we need a person who knows his way around gambling establishments."
"Lando?
Isn't that a job you could do?"
She knew his answer before she even asked the question.
Looking at the cracked and gasping wastelands of Kessel always made Morath Duel hungry.
Duel turned from the window and went to an alcove in the office.
Time for a snack. He withdrew a cage of fat and juicy flying insects. Opening the mesh door, Duel thrust his entire head into the cage. The insects fluttered around his eyes, his ears, his cheeks. Duel's sharp tongue shot out again and again, spearing the insects and slurping them into his mouth. Someone knocked on his door. Wearing the insect cage over his head, Duel turned around to see Skinksnacks.
I have a report, Morath.
Duel extracted his head from the cage, then sealed the opening.
We have finished overhauling the Millennium Falcon. All identifying marks are removed, replaced with fake serial numbers. We made a few other modifications in addition to the regular repairs it needed. With your permission, I'll have it flown up to the Garrison Moon, where it can be incorporated into our space navy.
Duel nodded.
Good, good. What about our work on the energy shield generators? I want them functional as soon as possible, just in case the New Republic comes after us.
Our engineers on the moon base think they can reroute the circuits so we won't need all the parts we're missing. Kessel will be impregnable before long.
Duel's single eye lit up with eagerness.
Have Han Solo and his Wookiee gone into the mines yet?
Skinksnacks tapped his fingertips together.
I've reserved an armored personnel transport and will make the delivery personally within the hour.